Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3, Krishna is the source of all incarnations. Text number 6. Word meaning, saha, that, eva, certainly, pratamam, first, deva, supreme lord, kaumaram, name the kumaras, unmarried, sargam, creation, ashita, under, chachara, perform, duscharam, very difficult to do. Brahma, in the order of Brahman. Brahmacharyam, under discipline to realize the absolute. Brahman. Akhanditam, unbroken.
Saiva pratamam deva. Kaumaram sargamashrita. Chachara duscharam brahma. Brahmacharyam akhanditam. Sa eva pratamam deva. Kaumaram sargamashrita. Chachara duscharam brahma. Brahmacharyam akhanditam.
Translation. First of all, in the beginning of creation, there were four unmarried sons of Brahma, the Kumaras, who, being situated in a vow of celibacy, underwent severe austerities for realization of the absolute truth. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The creation of the material world is effected, maintained, and then again annihilated at certain intervals. So there are different names of the creations in terms of the particular types of Brahma, the father of the living beings in the creation. The Kumaras, as above mentioned, appeared in the Kaumara creation of the material world. And to teach us the process of Brahman realization, they underwent a severe type of disciplinary action as bachelors. These Kumaras are empowered incarnations. And before executing the severe type of disciplinary actions, all of them became qualified Brahmins. This example suggests that one must first acquire the qualifications of a Brahmana, not simply by birth, but also by quality. And then one can undergo the process of Brahman realization. Om dhyana timanantasya dhyananjana shalakaya chakshurun militamena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Today we focus on the four Kumaras, Sanat, Sanaka, Sanandana, and Sanatana, often called the Sanakadi Kumaras. Actually, when you hear this Sanaka, because one of them is Sanaka, so Sanakadi means Sanaka and so on. So it means the four Kumaras. Generally, it's listed that way. One might think, well, I guess he's the first one. He's the chief one, but it doesn't seem to be that way, actually. At different times, one of the four speaks Sanat Kumar is often mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam as the speaker. In fact, Sanat Kumar has his own Sanhita, Sanat Kumar Sanhita. It's extracted from one of the Puranas. I read two different things, actually. One place it said it was from the Shiva Purana. Another place I read it was from a different Purana. I forget. Maybe it's in both places. But that book is available, actually, Sanat Kumar Sanhita. And it's about Krishna, Radha Krishna. In the beginning of it, Narada Muni asked Lord Shiva, what is it? Generally, to chant Vedic mantras, you have to have all these different qualifications, but in Kali Yuga, people are so unqualified. What can we do to save them? What should they chant? So Lord Shiva gives them two mantras, actually, and they both have the phrase in there, Gopi Jana Vallabha. So he gives them Gopi Bhava mantras, you might say. That's what Lord Shiva suggests at one chance. And the whole book is about worshiping Radha and Krishna. As I said, I think it's 59 or 56 chapters. So it's supposed to be for Kali Yuga, and it's, of course, focused on worship of Radha and Krishna. Not only chanting the mantra, but how to worship them in many details. So this is called the Sanat Kumar Samhita. So Sanat Kumar spoke this, actually. He's relating the story of Narada Muni talking to Lord Shiva. So Sanat, these four Kumars, they're also called Chatu Sanat. Chatu means four, and Sana means the Sanas. So for a long time I was trying to figure out, is there some significance to this, Sana? What seems to be, as I've seen in different places, it seems to be only a reference to their name. Each one of their names begins with Sana. So there are these Chatu Sana. They're the four Sanas. Each one of the name begins with Sana. Sana does actually mean something. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says it means to spread out. When I came across this, I thought, well, try to apply this to all the different names. It doesn't seem to work, actually. You have Sana, then you try to get spread out, and then Tana. How does it work? It doesn't work. Or Sana Ka. No. So, as I was thinking of this, there's actually a principle in Sanskrit interpretation where the first meaning, when you read something, you just take it on face value, basically. You take what it means. Like if you read Krishna, then you think this is referring to Krishna, the son of Vasudeva. That's not that this is black and it means this or that, and you take apart, well, Krish means this and Na means that and so on. That's the second step, actually. The first step is to take it what seems to be obvious. This is what the word means. So similarly, the names, I don't think we have to split them apart, which I want to try to do. The names of the Kumaras that all begin with Sana and figure out what they might mean, but this is simply what their names are. Sanat, Sanaka, Sanatan, Sanandana, and Sanatan Kumar. So they're, of course, Mahajans. I was just thinking this morning, we say Dwadash Mahajan, there are 12 Mahajans. Well, actually, there's 15 because four are counted as one. The Kumaras, Swayambhur, Narada, Shambhu, Kumaro, Kapilo, Manu. So there's a list of 12, and one of those 12 is Kumara, but there's actually four of them. So you might say there's 15 Mahajan. Or they're taken as a group, the four Kumaras. And there's an interesting, in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, this is the third canto is where Vidura and Maitreya are speaking. Their conversation is introduced at the beginning of the third canto. And there's some discussion that goes on between them. And at one point, well, let me read this. This is from the eighth chapter. These are the beginning verses of the eighth chapter, third canto, which I've always found to be quite interesting. So actually, they've been speaking for some time since the beginning of the third canto. Now we're in the eighth chapter. But then Maitreya Rishi says, let me now begin speaking on the Bhagavat Purana. Actually, I was just listening yesterday. There's the, what is it called, Hindu Studies program at Oxford that the devotees run. So they had a couple of years ago, they had a Bhagavat seminar, different scholars talking about the Bhagavat. So they're all very careful of how they pronounce it. So they all say, Bhagavata. 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 So in the Bhagavata Purana, let me now begin speaking on the Bhagavata Purana, which was directly spoken to the great sages by the personality of Godhead for the benefit of those who are entangled in extreme miseries for the sake of very little pleasure. That's why we're hearing the Bhagavatam. That's who we are, entangled in extreme miseries for the sake of very little pleasure. Some time ago, being inquisitive to know, Sunat Kumar, the chief of the boy saints, this is probably also Sunak Adi, it may have said Sunat Adi or something like that, I know what the Sanskrit is. Adi can be, generally Adi, of course, it's often translated as beginning with, but there are different ways you can phrase it. It can also mean and so on, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're starting with the top of the list and then going down from there. Anyway, here Prabhupada translates it as the chief of the boy saints, accompanied by other sages, inquired exactly as you have about the truths regarding Vasudeva, the Supreme, from Lord Sankarshan, who is seated at the bottom of the universe. So this is the scene, you can just picture it. Lord Sankarshan sits at the bottom, or lies at the bottom of the universe. Sit here, it says sit. You know, in the fifth canto, there's a whole chapter, The Glories of Lord Ananta. So that's Lord Sankarshan. It says, at that time, Lord Sankarshan was meditating upon his Supreme Lord, whom the learned esteem as Lord Vasudeva. But for the sake of the advancement of the great learned sages, he slightly opened his lotus-like eyes and began to speak. In that description of the fifth canto, it's described how he's, of course, he's said to be an expansion of Baladeva, specifically. But it's described there that he has one earring. And when the Acharya says, this is an indication, and here it talks about his eyes being closed, it says that he's always slightly intoxicated. And the one earring is also an indication of that. He's too intoxicated to put on two earrings. He only wears one. He only has to get one on. Yeah. But anyway, he slightly opened his lotus-like eyes. So the Kumaras are there. The sages came from the highest planets down to the lower region through the water of the Ganges, and therefore the hair on their heads was wet. They touched the lotus feet of the Lord, which are worshipped with various paraphernalia by the daughters of the serpent king when they desire good husbands. This is also mentioned in that chapter in the fifth canto. It says they're actually sexually agitated, you can say. They're seeing Lord Sankarshan and getting a little disturbed. The daughters of the serpent king. The four Kumaras, headed by Sanat Kumar, who all knew the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, glorified the Lord in rhythmic accents with selected words full of affection and love. It's a nice indication of how it should. Of course, the Lord is called Uttama Shloka. The Prabhupada's translation is so nice. Rhythmic accents with selected words full of affection and love. At that time, Lord Sankarshan, with his thousands of raised hoods, began to radiate an effulgence from the glowing stones on his head. So he has jewels on his forehead. Actually, even the Nagas in the Nagaloka, they also, there's no sun there. They light up the place with jewels on their foreheads, on their heads. Lord Sankarshan thus spoke the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam to the great sage Sanat Kumar, who had already taken the vow of renunciation. Sanat Kumar also, in his turn, when inquired of by Sankhyayana Muni, explained Srimad Bhagavatam as he had heard it from Sankarshan. So here we're getting an idea about the Kumara Sampradaya. Of course, that's one of the four Sampradayas. So Sankarshan speaks to the Kumaras, specifically Sanat Kumar is mentioned, and he speaks to Sankhyayana Muni. The great sage Sankhyayana was the chief amongst the transcendentalists, and when he was describing the glories of the Lord in terms of Srimad Bhagavatam, it so happened that both my spiritual master, Parashara, and Brihaspati heard him. So this is Maitreya's parampara. We have Sankarshan, we have Sanat Kumar, Sankhyayana Muni, then Parashara Muni, and then Maitreya. Now Vyasadeva is also a disciple of Parashara Muni. So they're God brothers. Maitreya and Vyasadeva are God brothers. So anyway, so this is the succession as it goes. So this is mentioned in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. We get this picture of the Kumaras traveling through the water. I always find it interesting that their hair was wet, because you would think that they don't travel through the water like we do. Prabhupada talks about how sages could do. They could dip down and, you know, dip down in Haridwar and then come up somewhere else in India. So you wouldn't think they're not swimming the whole way, obviously. But in any case, they're coming up, I guess, when they surface, their hair is still wet. So the Kumaras are also mentioned just after this. But when the appearance of Lord Varaha, you know, when Lord Varaha appeared, actually the story is that this part of the, it's interesting, the speakers of the Bhagavatam, they often begin with a description of creation. So Maitreya Muni does that also. Even though Vidura has said, actually he said, I'm tired of hearing about the things related to Varnashram, basically, is what he said, because it's kind of mundane, I want to hear more specifically about the pastime of the Lord. But when Maitreya begins speaking, he starts talking about the creation. So in the course of the creation, in the very beginning, when there weren't very many, Lord Brahma, of course, is creating from his mind. And actually, I saw the name Brahma translated as the expansive one. Because Brahma means the greatest. So Brahma, his consciousness pervades the whole material universe that he presides over. So Brahma is creating from his mind different sages, and then he creates Swayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa, and he asks them to create progeny to populate the universe. So Swayambhuva Manu says, well, we can't because Bhu Loka is down at the bottom of the Garbhodaka Ocean. So, you know, there's no place to put the people, basically, at least on Bhur Loka, at least planet Earth. We often generally refer to it as planet Earth. Sometimes there's a question, is it the disk that we hear about in the fifth canto? What exactly? Of course, it's always shown as a globe on the tusks of Lord Varaha. So in any case, Lord Brahma is trying to figure out what to do, and then, of course, Lord Varaha appears from his nostril, and then he expands and makes great roar. And the sages realize that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead appearing as a boar. And they're offering him, they begin offering him prayers. Those are there in the third canto, those wonderful prayers to the Lord. One of the characteristics of Lord Brahma mentioned specifically is that he's said to be the embodiment of the Vedas. Of course, any form the Lord is, but in the course of those prayers, this is mentioned. So among those who were offering prayers at that time were the four Kumaras. They were present at the appearance of Lord Varaha, and they were among those who were offering prayers in his glorification. So the next significant pastime, which comes pretty soon after that, because actually what happens is Vidura, when he hears about Lord Varaha, because there's just a short, there's the glorification, but then there's the battle where Lord Varaha kills Hiranyaksha. But Maitreya wants to hear more about it, or Vidura wants to hear more about it. So he asks Maitreya, tell me more about the pastimes of the Lord, and he specifically wants to hear about Lord Varaha. So then we have several, the whole pastime of Lord Varaha, of course, covers quite a few chapters. So then we hear about how, I think the next chapter is called The Pregnancy of Diti in the Evening. He's going tracing back the beginnings of the story. Diti was, of course, you know, she was sexually agitated and she wanted to unite with her husband at the wrong time. So Kardama Muni and Diti, there were auspicious omens, of course, when these two demons were conceived. And in the chapter, Kashyapa Muni is explaining to her. It's explained to Diti, oh, you condemned woman, you know, you approached me at the wrong time. This was so inauspicious. I warned you what was happening. Because she felt a little sorry after she did. Oh, I'm sorry. I just got carried away, whatever. And Kashyapa Muni, so he says that you're going to bear two demons are going to be, you know, the terror of the whole world. But one of the sons of one of your sons, namely Prahlad, is going to be a great devotee of the Lord. And one of your sons will be killed by the Supreme Lord. It's interesting, there's a verse there that she says, I'm glad he'll be killed by the Lord and not by the Brahmanas, because The Brahmanas, they're really nasty, essentially. She says, when they punish really hard, essentially, is what she says. Better he'll be killed by the Lord. So anyway, she knows now that she's bearing these universally powerful demons within her womb. So she bears them within her. We hear this often in the Bhagavatam, how women somehow, by the power of their strength, they're able to not deliver. So for 100 years, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu are within her womb. And what happens is the son, because of this force, the force of her holding back the pregnancy, the sun and the light of the sun and moon are being blocked. Everything is turning dark in the universe. So the demigods are, they don't like this very much. So they go to Lord Brahma and say, what's going on? We're very afraid. Everything seems so auspicious. What's going on? So Lord Brahma, that he starts telling a story. Once upon a time, the four Kumaras, who were wandering around the universe at will, they decided to go to Vaikuntha. It's often mentioned about how these great souls, they don't really have any purpose. They can just go wherever they want. They're wandering at will. They're free to wander at will, just like Narada Muni goes here, goes there. So the Kumaras, they don't have anything to do, you might say. Of course, they're just inspired by their spiritual whatever power directs them here and there. So they go to the gates of Vaikuntha, of course, and then Jaya and Vijaya won't let them in. So the Kumaras, they curse Jaya and Vijaya to descend into this material world. And, of course, there's this commotion is going on at this gate of Vaikuntha. So Lord Narayan hears about it. He goes there with Lakshmi Devi. And at that time, there's a very important verse that's spoken in the Bhagavatam. Tasya lavinda nayana shipada lavinda kinjalka mishra tulsi makaranda vayo antargata swavivarena chakarte sham sankshoba makshara tusham apichitta tanbo. This verse says that when the Kumaras, when their nostrils captured the fragrance of the saffron mixed with tulsi from the lotus feet of the Lord, they experienced a change in their body and mind. So this verse is quoted four times, emanating from the mouth of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Lord Chaitanya is always making the same point, which is this verse is, tends to be quoted about. It's like the Atmarama verse. Now the purport of the Atmarama verse is that even though one may be Atmarama, which means self-satisfied, in Bhagavad Gita, we hear about the self-satisfied yogi in the third chapter, because Krishna's talking about how everyone has to work. But then he says, but if you're self-satisfied, you don't have any duties to perform. So the Atmarama is self-satisfied, situated in Brahman or Atma, their own self, Atmarama. But the Atmaramas, they are attracted to hearing the pastime, the qualities of the Lord. That means that the Lord has transcendental qualities. There are qualities in Brahman that can attract even the Brahman realized or the impersonalist. This verse, by the way, the Atmarama verse, is there in the seventh chapter of the first canto, because Sutta Goswami says that Vyasadeva, after he had his realization, he did his meditation and he realized the absolute truth, you can say, then he taught the Bhagavatam to Shukadeva Goswami. So Shaunaka Rishi asked, well, why would Shukadeva Goswami undertake this difficult task of studying the whole Bhagavatam? So the reply is this Atmarama verse, because it's attractive even to someone like Shukadeva Goswami. So the same principle is applying in this verse. The Kumaras were so amazing, they could go to Vaikuntha planet, even if they didn't quite get in at that time, but they could go anywhere. They're in Brahman, Brahma Jyoti, but so they're supposed to be equipoised, the Prabhupada's word, poised, not disturbed by anything. They're just shanti, shanti, shanti. But when they smell, they just got the fragrance. It entered into their nostrils, the fragrance of tulsi mixed with saffron, and they became agitated. They're not supposed to get agitated. They're just peaceful sages. So this is the... this verse is often quoted to make this point. that the Lord is beyond. He's supreme, eternal, absolute truth, and he's superior to Brahma. So, of course, there's a whole exchange there between Lord Vishnu and Lord Narayan and the four Kumaras. He's very sorry, Lord Narayan. He says, I take this as my offense because they're my servants. There's a line of Prabhupada quotes. Britya paradhi swami no danda. If the Britya, the servant, makes an aparad, an offense, swami no danda, then the swami or the master gets punished. So we're responsible for what our subordinates do. That's the idea. So Lord Narayana says, you know, my servants did this. I feel very bad. And he glorified, there are many verses where he's glorifying the brahmanas. There's that one amazing verse where he says, if my arm offends a brahmana, then I'll cut off my arm. And also the Kumaras, they say, well, we'll take it back. It's okay. We don't really want a person. But the Lord says, no, it has my approval. And then he mentions how this was already more or less preordained, because one time I was taking rest and the gatekeepers, I think it was Lakshmi, right? Lakshmi wanted to see the Lord. Is that what it was? And she was stopped, and then she cursed them before. So he said, this is just sort of a continuation of the same verse. So of course, the Kumaras, that's basically the role that they play in that episode, which is a major one. So let's see, they're also mentioned. They're examples of Shanta Bhaktas. Here it's said that they're Shaktyavesha avatars. They're in the list in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Lord Chaitanya is speaking about the different kinds of avatars. So one of those kinds of avatars is Shaktyavesha. So the four Kumaras they have the Shakti of Jnana. Narada has the Shakti of Bhakti. Anantashesha has Bhudharana Shakti. He holds up the world. So different entities, they're empowered in different ways. So the Kumaras have jnana. They're jnanis. They're like perfect jnanis. So they're in Shantarasa. They appreciate the Lord, this is another one of those interesting things, because you see them interacting with the Lord sometimes. So you would think that maybe they're in Dasya, but somehow they're explained to be in Sakurasa. Let's see what else we have here. I wrote some things down. They're also there when in the Daksha, after the Daksha Yajna, the whole fiasco of the Daksha Yajna, then the demigods were contrite at the end because they had been implicated in supporting Daksha and not saying anything when Daksha was offending Lord Shiva, and then so many bad things happened. So Lord Brahma told them, you need to go to Lord Shiva and apologize, ask for his forgiveness. So they all traveled to Kailash. There's a long description, actually, in that section of the Bhagavatam about Mount Kailash. So they see Lord Shiva there, and Narada Muni is there. Of course, he's everywhere. He seems to be in every pastime. But the Kumaras are also there. Lord Shiva is speaking. He's giving Bhagavatam class. And the four Kumaras are there at that time. And then the Kumaras, they also appear in the pastime of Prithu Maharaj, the Prithu Maharaj Leela. First, he's told, I think it's Lord Vishnu that tells him. Or maybe it's just the reciters, because they were reciters glorifying Prithu Maharaj. And he's told at some point that he's going to meet the Kumaras. So this actually happens. It's described here. Is this it? Yes, here. The great sage Maitreya said, while the citizens were thus praying to the most powerful king, Prithu, the four Kumaras, who were as bright as the sun, arrived on the spot. There's another place, I forget where I was reading, I don't know if it was in reference to Vamanadeva. Someone was appearing in an assembly, and he was so effulgent, and it was said that it appeared as if Sanat Kumar himself had appeared. So the Kumaras are effulgent. It says, seeing the glowing effulgence of the four Kumaras, the masters of all mystic power, The king and his associates could recognize them as they descended from the sky. Srila Prabhupada says in his purport, during the reign of Maharaj Prithu, everything on the surface of this globe was sinless. Therefore, the Kumaras decided to see the king. Ordinarily, they do not go to any planet which is sinful. So we hear about that. The demigods used to descend. You know, it's interesting. I spent some time, some of the work that Judah Karmaprabhu has done with ancient archaeology is quite interesting. And if you look at any of this on YouTube, then of course things come up on the side. So you see other research by other people about ancient, especially ancient artifacts, ancient architecture, buildings. So sometimes in these buildings, they have drawings on the walls, for example, that are very, very old. Though there's debates all the time about how old they are. But you'll see these, a scene, this reminded me of something you might see in one of these drawings, or even in some cave drawings, they have things like this, where there are people, you know, obviously descending from the sky, and there are people on the earth watching and so on, or they're flying in airplanes, and they're not supposed to have airplanes back then, but you have drawings of airplanes and so on. So apparently there is archaeological evidence of people witnessing this kind of thing that's being described here, some higher personalities coming out of the sky or making their appearance to us ordinary mortals. So that, of course, this Sanat Kumar. In this story of Prithu Maharaj, the Kumaras are descending, and again we have Sanat Kumar. He's the one who's doing the speaking in this one. They're also mentioned at the when the everyone went to the solar eclipse at Kurukshetra, where Krishna met the residents of Vrindavan. So in that, an important part of that whole description is that all the sages have come there. And Vasudeva speaks to the sages. He questions them. The sages say, well, he's the father of Krishna. What's he talking about? Why is he asking us a question? But anyway, this among the sages who are present there at Kurukshetra were the four Kumaras. So again, they descended there during the time of Lord Krishna. I actually have a whole section here from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. I was going to read some of it, but it's getting late. But the basic idea is that when Gopakumar is going, you know, up and up and up in the universe, so he goes to Janaloka, you know, above Satyaloka, then Maharloka, then Janaloka. So in Janaloka, you have people performing sacrifices. They all have their sacrifices. And the Lord appears from the fire of sacrifice. So these great sages, they're seeing the Lord in the form of the Lord of sacrifice. So Gopakumara, wherever he goes, he's always seeing Krishna in different forms. And he's always thinking, wow, this my goal of my life has been attained and so on. But after a while, he starts getting a little, he wants to move on. For some reason, he's not completely satisfied. Of course, ultimately, he wants to go to Krishna. That's why he's not satisfied. He's a Vraja Bhakta. So there, from there, on Janaloka, then at one day, this effulgent person arrives, everyone there on Janaloka is offering great respects to this person. The person discourses with them a little and then leaves. So then Gopakumar asks, who was that? And then they start explaining something, and they start talking, the sages there on Janaloka say, well, he's from Tapaloka, he's one of the Kumaras, and so on. Explain something about him. So as happens throughout the story, then he chants his mantra, Gopakumar chants his mantra, then he gets transported to Tapaloka, and he spends some time there. But what he discovers in Tapaloka is that, well, one thing he does is that he starts looking around for the Lord, because he sees the Lord everywhere he goes. But he doesn't see the Lord. And people won't talk to him, right? Because they're all just absorbed in meditation. So he's a little disturbed, and he's running around. Well, the Lord has to be here somewhere. He was in the last place, and so on. So finally, Pipalayana Rishi discusses with him, Pipalayana is one of the Navayogendras. So he starts talking to Gopakumara, gives his mercy to him. And he basically, one of the things is, why are you running around looking for the Lord? He's inside your heart. You don't have to. He's in your mind. You use your mind to see the Lord. Because we see with our mind, really, anyway. You don't see with your eyes. You see with your mind. When you see something, the mind has to be involved. So you don't need to see with your eyes. So just meditate on the Lord. So that's what everyone is doing there. Everyone's meditating on the Lord. But there's an interesting description here. The Kumaras come too at some point. And let's see. He said, there I saw that same Sanat Kumar and the blessed Sanaka and Sanandana and the fourth brother Sanatana. The residents of Tapaloka, who appeared similar to the Kumaras, were honoring the four brothers. The Kumaras were enjoying among themselves a long discussion incomprehensible to persons like me. You know, Gopa Kumar, he doesn't know any philosophy. He just chants his mantra and he's transported all over the world. He's kind of learning things as he goes along. So here they're Brahmavadis, you can say, in one sense. They're talking about transcendental topics, and he just doesn't know what they're talking about, basically. Though they did not have the distinguishing attributes of God, from seeing those brothers on Tapaloka, I felt intense, spontaneous joy. When they went off to their respective places to absorb themselves in meditation, I started wandering, always searching for the Lord. Let's see, where does it describe here? Oh, this is before, actually, before Pipa Lyana speaks to him. So he sees the... I'll just explain it. The Kumaras, when he's speaking to the Kumaras, he's explaining what he wants. He wants to see the Lord. So they actually transform into forms of the Lord. Lord Narayan, Lord Vishnu. One of the Kumaras shows different forms, avatars of the Lord. They have this kind of power. They can actually, by their own power, spiritual power, they can, I don't know what they're doing exactly, reflecting or something. Of course, the reflection of the Lord is the Lord himself. You're looking at Sanat Kumar, and all of a sudden you see Lord Narayan. He's somehow transformed into Lord Narayan. So this is the experience that Gopa Kumar had there. So he says there that he enjoyed there for a very long time, but then Lord Brahma appears. Then he asks, you know, who's this and so on. So they hear, well, he's the head of the whole universe. He's the top of it. He's so great. He's the father of the Kumaras and so on. So then Gopa Kumara leaves that place and he goes to Lord Brahma. He goes to Brahma Loka. Then, of course, what happens there? He becomes Lord Brahma. And when he does that, actually, he's very powerful. He propagates Vaishnavism, Krishna consciousness, basically. He does all kinds of things. He does that in different places. When he has some power, then according to what he has understood, then he, like when he was a king on earth, he was a very powerful king, had a big kingdom, so it became a Vaishnava kingdom. So as this powerful Lord Brahma, as the Vaishnava, because he's learning so many things, and his bhakti is becoming revealed gradually, step by step. So he takes in, and then he gives off, he gives out. So Lord Brahma, he also does that. Anyway, I think that was about it. I think research about the four Kumaras. I'll just read this one. This is from the seventh chapter. Because in the seventh chapter of the second canto, we have a similar verse. Because in the seventh chapter of the second canto, we have the scheduled incarnations and their functions, I think the title of it is. So here we have incarnations in the third chapter of the first canto, and we have incarnations in the seventh chapter of the second canto. So where the Kumaras appear there, it said, or where they're mentioned, to create different planetary systems, I, that's Lord Brahma, had to undergo austerities and penance. And the Lord, thus being pleased with me, incarnated as the four Sanas, Sanaka, Sanandana, Sanatana, and Sanat Kumar. In the previous creation, the spiritual truth was devastated, but the four Sanas explained it so nicely that the truth at once became clearly perceived by the sages. So they are instructors of all the other sages, and they speak in such a way that everyone can understand. Pretty bold. So, any questions? Sukhakaram Prabhu?
I'm thinking that even though the Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't mention, but because the Kumaras have mystical powers, then they could change form. So like when you come to this physical realm, then they exhibit a physical body. But when you go to a different realm, like in the Vaikuntha planets and so, mm-hmm. then they change to a spiritual form. I mean, Bhagavatam doesn't say that, but it seems that's obvious.
Yeah. Yeah, because Prabhupada would make the point that the atmosphere is different in different places, so you have to have a body suitable for that atmosphere. So they can do that, so they can go anywhere they want, so they can adapt. They don't need to put on a space suit. They have part of their shakti that they're able to do that. One, you would assume from that they could also go to the sun planet and have fiery bodies or something, so they can do what they want. They have that power. Ragatmakatru?
Prabhu, what was the curse that Lakshmi Devi bestowed upon Jaya and Vijay, and where is that?
I don't know if it says. Does it say specifically? It's in the third canto. It's in the course of that lila, but I don't know.
Seventh canto has a summary.
Oh, because there's also a summary of this pastime in the seventh canto, first chapter. So
you know
maybe it's explained there.
What the curse was?
I don't know the verse number.
The curse.
Oh, what the curse was exactly? I don't know. I don't know if it says. It says that she was angry at them and she cursed them. I don't know if it gives any detail of what exactly the curse was.
You're mentioning about, we understand that the Kumars are Brahmavadis, yeah?
Mm.
And yet you were mentioning earlier in the class that Sanat Kumar has written the Sanat Kumar Samhita, which are talking about Radha Krishna's pastimes. So it's kind of a little bewildering. I mean, how is
I guess you can teach about it even if you haven't realized it. Maybe that's the idea. I mean, we do that. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's repeating something that he has heard. He's a sage, apparently. But yes, one would think, you would think that would move him to want to have this higher wrestle, but that's the way they're described. They're described as being Shanta Bhaktas.
Well, I mean, I guess they're considered, I mean, in my understanding, anybody is considered, whoever they are, whether they're Brahmavadis or Mayavadis, is their attachment or that's their goal, whatever their realization may be. But, I mean, we're considered practicing devotees, whatever our realization is, but our goal is, you know, to serve the lotus feet or Radha and Krishna. So it seems like one who's a Brahmavadi, their goal or their attachment is that, but yet they speak. So I guess they're not that's not their goal, or but they're speaking. That's Samhita.
In the book, the Rasamrita Sindhu, or Nectar of Devotion, Shanta Ras is described as that's what the yogis get, the sages get. They just get this overwhelming. It's sort of like in Christianity, they have this idea of this beatific vision, that it's just this overwhelming. I don't know if it's a light or what it is, but somehow they're just overpowered by this some kind of sense of the supreme divinity or the supreme transcendence. So the main characteristic of Shantarasa is just this awe, just awestruck, and somehow. Yeah, you would think that you would move on from that and go into dasya. After that awe, then you would think that the next step would naturally be that you want to do some service. And of course, they are serving. So the Kumaras, they're doing service. They're in a disciplic succession. Now, it can also be that they're just, you know, different persons are emblematic. They're, you might say, assigned to that position. If you want to think about Shantarasa, then think about the Kumaras. Because even in this pastime, as you were phrasing your question, there's a question that I have. When we first hear about, when the Kumaras, of course, I didn't mention this in the class, but they were asked to create progeny, and they refused, and that's when they decided to remain as brahmacharis, like naked five-year-old boys. So there it's said about them that the reason they did that is because they were Vasudeva Parayana. So usually Vasudeva Parayana means you're a devotee of Vasudeva. That's the way it's translated, not Ayana Parayana, the same word is there. So I've always wondered about this, what it says here. So of course there are different days. I don't know, Kumaras, maybe this is also a position. I don't know that much about, you know, the Kumara Tattva. So one thing also the other day, I was preparing for my Sunday feast lecture about Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. And in one lecture he was giving, he mentioned something about Brahman, and he said something like, Brahman is just incomprehensible. We don't really, because I also think like that, we hear about, you know, one can be in Brahman and then come back to this material world, but I think, well, really? You think that when you're in Brahman, you're just nothing. There's no time, there's no feeling, there's nothing. So why would you have this urge to come back to the material world? It just seems illogical. So he made this point that, you know, Brahman, the Brahma Jyoti or Brahman, it's incomprehensible to us. There, you know, things are naturally going to appear contradictory.
We can look at Bhavatarangi that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote in the Bhagavad
Gita. Yeah, that lecture, the Bhagavat, you're referring to?
No, Bhavatarangini, the whole book, Banu Maharaj translated, Navadi Dhammahatma.
Oh, Navadi Dhammahatma, yeah.
There where four Kumaras met Lord Chaitanya. And the four Kumara Sampradaya was not established before. According to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that's the place the Sampradaya is established. Mm. And they actually had a darshan. Because we see that Rupa Goswami Pad write the song, Sanaka Sanatana Varnita Charite. Rupa Goswami Pad, such an intimate associate of Radharani, why he's praying to Sanat Kumar doesn't make any sense.
He says Sanaka is glorifying Radharani.
Yes. In the Sangita. So it's very deep in that sense. So from that angle I look at it, okay. Then they were directed to this establishing Radha Krishna worship as the highest. And then Mahaprabhu says, yes, you can come. And they also came and joined in Mahaprabhu's Leela. All four Acharya, they came. They participated in Navadev Leela.
Yeah, I was just reading that. It doesn't say who they were, I don't think, in Gorgona, there's Deepika.
No, not so much directly saying. But they gave indication like Ramanuja Acharya is Ananta Acharya. He was dancing with his whole group of disciples.
Now, Lord Chaitanya took one thing from each Sampradaya, and yes. that was Radha Krishna worship from Kumara
yes.
Sampradaya?
But then Prabhupada's Godbrother, Sridhar Maharaj, says that's a Sakya form of worship.
Sakya, not Parakya. Yeah. That's because they're bachelors. It's interesting Prabhupada used that word, bachelors. It has a different connotation in the West. He's using it as celibate or brahmachari. Actually, this word I was going to mention, and it's interesting in this verse, brahmachari, and Prabhupada translates it in a word for word, is under discipline to realize the absolute truth, Brahman. So, of course, the word brahmachari means to move in Brahman. Brahma, of course, Brahma also means the Vedas. So what the brahmachari is, swadhyaya, is supposed to be always absorbed in the Vedas. So it can be a reference to that also. Hare Mohan Prabhu?
Two things. I was thinking that they sometimes say Sukadeva Goswami was also a Brahmavadi.
Yeah.
But his father told him Bhagavatams. And then I remember once, tell me if it was accurate, is that in Vrindavan, that the trees, the cows, they were in the neutral rasa.
Yeah, so, that's another whole thing I don't know.
I
don't understand that. It's definitely not the same as the Shanta rasa. But, I mean, I've also heard that in the Loka Vrindavan, it's, you know, Dasya stuff, you don't have Shanta rasa. Because, for one thing, Goloka Vrindavan is, well, it's Balaram, actually, right? Balaram is the Sandini, he's the personification, you say, the representative of the Sandini Shakti, which is what the atmosphere that Krishna enjoys his leelas in, that Lord Balaram, or created from Lord Balaram. So, it's a different thing. I mean, I remember hearing too, when I was a brand new devotee, that Krishna's flute was in Shanta Rasa because it was a thing, and the trees and flowers and so on. But it's not like that. In fact, you can see in the Leela, that sometimes, even in Vaikuntha, we hear about Vaikuntha, devotees can do anything they want. If they want to be a tree, they can be a tree. If they want to be a snake, they can be a snake. They can be anything they want. And it's all about, well, it's really dasya there in Vaikuntha. It's all part of dasya. They all want to serve the Lord in that way. So what to speak of Goloka Vrindavan, that the flowers are offering their fruits to Krishna, it seems to be a conscious act that they're doing. They're serving Krishna in that way. So that's definitely, you know, if it's neutrality, it's, I think we just think of it as neutrality because, well, they're not human and they're not, you know, so what could it be? But it's not the way Shantaras is described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. What it is, something else. It's part of Krishna's Swarup Shakti, all of these things.
Srimati Radharani is asking, Prabhupada translated, it's in Chaitanya Chaitanya Antalila, that asking a creeper, can you show your love and then start trembling? Mm. And then all the symptoms were saying. So then the whole concept is they are all made of sweet. So I don't know what is that means. Madhur, sweetness. Yeah.
Yeah, of course, we hear Krishna plays his flute so the stones melt and the water stops. And Krishna Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary in the first verse of the Bhagavatam, when he's talking about, he analyzes in different ways. So one of the ways, because it says that the water can appear like solid and fire can be, you know, these things. He says, well, that happens in Krishna's pastime. The solid things become liquid and the liquid things become solid. And so on. This is one of the ways he justifies his rustic interpretation of the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So they are conscious entities in any case. You know, they serve the Lord in that way. All right. Srila Prabhupada.